Welcome to Stand in the Gap Today with your host, the Honorable Sam Rohrer, President of the American Pastors Network, addressing the most pressing issues impacting our economy, our homes, our churches, our culture, and our daily lives from a biblical and constitutional perspective. Stand in the Gap Today, transforming the culture one heart at a time.
Did you know that the United States Congress and former presidents have had to engage in conflict with the Islamic world from the very beginning of our nation? Did you know that the Islamic goal of world domination really hasn't changed? Yet, there's a stark contrast in the way we as a nation dealt with the original conflict back in the 1700s and the way we're dealing with it now. In the 1700s, we dealt with it right, and we won. But may I submit that the way we're dealing with this challenge now, if we stay in the same course, we're going to lose? In our week-long emphasis on what every Christian must know about Islam, today is part four of that emphasis. Our theme today is Islam versus the United States, from the 1700s, to 2018, from the United States Navy to the United States Church. And with that brief introduction, I'd like to welcome you to Stand in the Gap today. I'm Sam Rohrer, and I'm going to be joined by Evangelist Dave Kistler, President of our North Carolina Pastors Network chapter and President of Hope Ministries International. And today we're going to be joined also by two very special guests, constitutional attorney and historian David New, in segments primarily 1 and 2, and then in segments 3 and 4, we're going to invite in Dr. Mark Christian, Egyptian-born and former Muslim imam, now the founder and director of globalfaithinstitute.org, and that's the website you can find them at. Well, David New, let me start right out here with you on this matter of Islam versus the United States. Few people know that the U.S. was forced to engage Islam in a very significant way right at the outset of our nation when George Washington was president, and then it carried over into the next couple of presidents. Can you give us a brief history of that engagement and how it came about?
Well, it's so nice to be with you today. Blessings to everyone. What happened was when the United States gained its independence from Great Britain, it changed its status naturally throughout the world. Before American independence, the British were paying tribute to the Muslim nations, to the powers in the, what's called the Barbary Coast. That would be Algeria, Tripoli, Tunis, and Morocco. And they were paying tribute. The British were paying that. And so before independence, when American shipping was going throughout these waters, we were protected by the payoffs that were made by the British. Well, when American independence came, we were no longer the beneficiaries of that protection. We had to protect ourselves. And basically that meant that the Barbary pirates, that were largely Muslim for sure, they demanded tribute from the United States of America. And that meant that George Washington and John Adams started making payments. And it's a sad chapter in our history, but that's exactly what happened. We started making payments to these people to leave us alone. Because if you didn't make the payments, they would capture your ships, they would hold them for ransom, and sometimes they would sell the American sailors off into slavery. And so this went on for quite some time, and when the United States started making these payments, the hawk in the Washington administration was Thomas Jefferson. He did not like this idea of paying these people anything. Well, as time progressed, we made various treaties, and these treaties basically were agreements to make tribute payments to leave our shipping alone. Well, eventually one of the leaders of Tripoli decided that he felt he wasn't getting enough money, and so he demanded more money. He raised the ante up to $225,000, and the United States government said, no, we're not going to do it. And this is during the Jefferson administration, and he said, well, if you don't do it, I'm going to declare war on you, and that's exactly what he did. The country of Tripoli declared war on the United States on May 14, 1801. This is America's first foreign war. And it was involving Tripoli. And it was involving making payments to these people, to the Muslim pirates, to get them to leave us alone. And that started a war. And this is where the Enterprise, you have the USS Enterprise aircraft carrier, and we have the Enterprise in Star Trek with Captain Kirk and Leonard Nimoy and Spock and all this. This is where the mystique of the word Enterprise begins, because at this point, there was a ship called, an American ship called the Enterprise, and they went up against the Tripolitan Navy, and they beat them very decisively. So that's when this story of the Enterprise really begins. This is August 1st, 1801, and the captain was a man by the name of Andrew Starrett. And so, anyway, this began the war. We finally won the war, the very first one. It went from 1801 to 1805. And the way Jefferson won the war is that he sent one of his military people to Egypt, and they collected an army, lots of Americans, but lots of Arabs, and they marched from Egypt all the way down to Tripoli, and they captured the second largest city in the Tripoli area called D-E-M-A. And once that city fell to the Americans, then the Tripolitan forces decided that maybe it was time to make peace after all.
David, this
is awesome.
And Tripoli
did go on for a little while longer, by the way. We continued to make at various points payments and tribute to them. It didn't end completely until after the War of 1812. After the War of 1812, the United States, once they finished the war with Britain, they sent Stephen Decatur out there to North Africa, and he said, "We are not doing this anymore, and if you can't handle it, we're just going to fight you right now," and that stopped it once and for all.
Well, David, this is really where the phrase in the Marine Corps hymn comes from the halls of Montezuma to the shores of Tripoli. So America's war with Islam goes way, way back, and this is something that most Americans have no clue about.
No. And there's another interesting thing about this business. Not only is this America's first foreign war, and it involved Muslim nation states, city states, basically, and some of them were part of the Ottoman Empire, which, of course, is a Muslim empire, but they were relatively independent in some ways, and so they were allowed by the Ottomans to engage in this business of piracy. And these people were just, this was a business for these people. But I'll go into something else that happened very interesting and involving Tripoli in just a minute when we come back in the second segment.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to Stand in the Gap today. It's Sam Rohr and Dave Kistler today, and our special guest, David New, and our upcoming special guest, Dr. Mark Christian. Our theme in a continuation this week, What Every Christian Must Know About Islam. And we're looking at Islam versus the United States, its history from the 1700s, the first engagement, to actually what is happening now. In the next section, we're going to talk about Thomas Jefferson and the Quran.
There's a silent but deadly cult spreading like a cancer among us. It's already martyred millions around the world and forced others into sexual slavery. That deadly cult is Islam. Pretending to be something it is not, Islam masquerades as peace but means submission. Yet most Americans are oblivious to this danger within. You can now learn the truth. You can get an attractive copy of What Every Christian Must Know About Islam this week for a gift of any amount from Stand in the Gap Radio. With key facts from previous radio programs and guests on Stand in the Gap today, including former Muslims, now Christians, former FBI agents, and preachers. This quick read booklet tells you what you need to know, simply and clearly. What Every Christian Must Know About Islam, an original publication of the American Pastors Network and Stand in the Gap Radio. Yours now for a gift of any amount. Just go to standinthegapradio.com to order or write us at Stand in the Gap Radio, Box 83, West Main Street, Elverson, Pennsylvania, 19520. Hello, this is Sam Rohr. Although the term Christian education doesn't occur in the Bible, it does speak of the moral and spiritual instruction of children. It places a high value on knowledge, both of God and His works. It describes the moral and spiritual fruits of this knowledge and defines its ultimate purpose, the growth of your child in godliness of character and action. That's why we suggest you consider BJU Press K-12 materials. Your child's a unique individual created for a specific purpose. Proper instruction that includes the Bible and the relational influence of godly teachers produces a pure heart and a willing mind. The Bible calls that success. BJU Press materials are well written, grade level appropriate, and biblically integrated. They teach critical thinking skills and keep your child engaged and excited about learning. If you're a Christian school teacher or administrator, a homeschool teacher, or a parent who just wants your child to learn more, start by exploring the BJU Press website. Visit bjupress.com. That's bjupress.com. Listeners all across America are thanking God for Stand in the Gap today. Listen to what Carol, a faithful partner from Southeast Pennsylvania, says about Stand in the Gap today.
Hello, my name is Carol, a regular and faithful listener of Stand in the Gap Today, a daily one-hour program heard Monday through Friday. The program hosts talk to interesting and fascinating guests who will discuss some of the most important issues of our day and time from a constitutional and biblical worldview. I hope you will join me for Stand in the Gap Today, a daily one-hour program heard Monday through Friday. You'll be so glad you did. And remember, the American Pastors Network covets your prayers and financial support.
Thanks, Carol. Your prayer and financial support of this program has helped us to become the main source of trustworthy news analysis for so many people. If you're listening to me right now and you've never contacted us like Carol did, would you do so now? Partner with us in prayer and finances by going to standinthegapradio.com. And if you're benefiting from this program, tell a friend.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today. For more information, visit our website at standinthegapradio.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are back here at the moment, and we are glad that you are there. If you are just joining us, I do want to just remind you that we are offering a booklet. The title of it is this: What Every Christian Must Know About Islam, How the Global Islamic Agenda Threatens America and Christians. We're running some spots during the program, and hopefully you have heard it or will. But this emphasis this week is on what every Christian must know about Islam. This program today is number 4 in a series this week. For a gift of any amount, you want to get this book. It's just 26 pages long. You will find it to be extraordinarily helpful. So I just want to put that in there. I encourage you to go to standinthegapradio.com, and then you can obtain that booklet. Now, one of the most intriguing matters of history revolve around the ownership of the Islamic Quran that was owned by Thomas Jefferson. That Quran is now kept in the Library of Congress after being purchased by Congress for the very purpose following the decimation of the archives by the British. What's disputed is by some is why Thomas Jefferson owned the Quran. Some say that he used it as an historic document where he looked for elements of law that could find its way into the United States Constitution. On the other hand, others say that Jefferson was looking for direction and found the Quran to be a great source of inspiration and guidance, effectively putting it on a similar level as the Bible. But on the other hand, there's another view that Thomas Jefferson, yes, he did own the Quran, but not because he wanted to follow it, but because he wanted to understand very clearly the elements within it that must be avoided when setting up a new nation based on self-government. In fact, Montesquieu in 1748 wrote one brief summary that impacted the views of Thomas Jefferson when he wrote this, quote, "From the characters of the Christian and the Mohammedan religions, we ought without any further examination to embrace the one and to reject the other. For it's much easier to prove that religion ought to humanize the manners of men than that any particular religion is true. It's a misfortune to human nature when religion is given by a conqueror." He's referring to Muhammad. "The Mohammedan religion, which speaks only by the sword, acts still upon men with that destructive spirit with which it was founded," end quote. It's a big difference when you understand why Thomas Jefferson had that Quran. Now, David, new. I want to go back to you as our historian and constitutional attorney. Do you think for a moment that Thomas Jefferson or any of the founders incorporated any aspect of Mohammedan Islamic Sharia law into our Declaration of Independence or U.S. Constitution, or, as Montesquieu summarized purposely, saying it ought to be rejected? What do you think?
I really find it very difficult to find anything in the U.S. Constitution or the Declaration of Independence that would suggest an influence, a Muslim influence, in our laws and our fundamental documents. I just don't think Thomas Jefferson was the hawk at this time against the Muslim Barbary states. So he was not, he didn't have a friendly attitude towards them at all. And of course, in those religion, in the Islamic religion, church and state, by definition, are not separated. Whereas in our situation, the church and state are clearly separated because the church has no role in Articles 1, 2, or 3 in the making and enforcing of the civil laws. So there are quite a few fundamental differences between our system of government and their system of government. When you read a lot of the constitutions, if you read the Kuwaiti constitution or the Saudi Arabia constitution, you might want to go there on your computer and Google them down. You will see right at the very, very beginning, either in Article 1 or Article 2 or very early, you'll see a statement that says something to the effect, Sharia law will be the source of legislation for the nation. Something like that. Well, you don't find anything like that in our Constitution. Of course, our Constitution was heavily influenced, definitely, by the Christian religion. And that's most obvious by dividing power between the three branches of the government. The founders believed that man had a fallen nature, and that if man had too much power, he would be corrupt and would abuse that power. And so to guard against that, the United States Constitution divides power. So the other thing that's interesting about these Barbary pirate people, we not only got the Marine Corps song to the shores of Tripoli, we not only got the Enterprise, the beginning, we also got the Marine Corps sword, which comes from Tripoli, the design. But also there's this famous paragraph in the Treaty of Tripoli about in Article 11, where it says, as the government of the United States of America is not in any sense founded on the Christian religion. Oh, mercy. This is dating back to 1796. Secularists to this day go gaga over that paragraph like nobody's business. They quote it in the New York Times. They quote it in court cases. It's quoted everywhere. And, of course, they're always very, very careful never, ever to go to any other treaties of the United States, because there you get the exact opposite conclusion. And they never tell you what the State Department says about this paragraph 11. It is true, it was signed by John Adams, the treaty was, with that paragraph in it, and it was ratified by the Senate. But what they don't tell you is that paragraph 11, even though it was ratified and signed by the president, was a bogus paragraph. The State Department said that. They said it was added later to the treaty, that if you look at the Arabic text of the Treaty of Tripoli of 1796, there is no paragraph 11. Somebody added it, and nobody knows who did it. But, of course, what they also, these secularists who use this thing and never tell people these facts, they never tell them to go to look at some of the other treaties. The United States signed all kinds of treaties in the name of the Most Holy Trinity. It did it with Russia. It did it with Costa Rica. It did it with one nation after another, over and over and over again. There's about 20 or 30 of them. I read all the treaties that the United States signed and created from day one all the way up to the 1920s. And there's about 20 or 30 of them, and every one of them starts in the name of the Holy Trinity. Now, when the government, when the United States government signs a treaty in the under the authority of the Most Holy Trinity, my dear, you have effectively, in a different way, said this is a Christian nation. Nobody begins a treaty in name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit unless they acknowledge God, the Christian God, as part of the law of the land in the sense of its influence.
David, let me jump in and ask you a question right here. And by the way, I have one of those Marine Corps swords that was given to me as a gift by a group of Christians on the coast of North Carolina that are all former Marines. And it is something I treasure for a lot of reasons, but one of the reasons being the reason you just mentioned. But David, the history of the United States of America going way back early on, it is obvious that presidents, members of the Supreme Court, authorities in this country clearly understood what Montesquieu said, and that is this danger that Islam posed by ruling by the sword and death being a threat if you did not follow Islamic ideology. But something has changed in this country. Some would say that it is Islam that has changed. Others would suggest, no, something's changed within the United States, that we no longer see Islam as the threat that the founders saw it to be. What has changed, David?
Well, part of the problem is that because America is becoming more and more secular, they are devaluing the influence and impact of religion. And in many respects, secularists, when they look at history, they don't even see a role of religion in history, in many respects. And as a result of that, that means one of the things they're liable to do is not fully appreciate the role of the religion of Islam. They not only discount the role of the religion of Christianity in the formation of America, but they also discount the role of the religion of Islam as a possible threat to the United States. When these radical characters start coming in here and start blowing things up, you would think starting in the Clinton administration when they tried to blow up the World Trade Center, somebody might have woken up.
But David, it's clear they are not. And I think you put your finger really right on that actual sweet spot, more or less, put it that way, is that when we lose the understanding of the Christian religion, as our founders would say, biblical tenets that undergird our Constitution, our Declaration of Independence, our whole concept in self-government, when that is minimized, then it makes us susceptible to all kinds of other strategies. And ladies and gentlemen, when we come back, we're going to pick up with our special guest, Dr. Mark Christian. Mark Christian was born in Egypt. He was a former Muslim imam before he came to Christ. He's formed his own organization called Global Faith Institute. When we come back, we're going to talk with Mark about how Islam is actually infiltrating our government and top levels of position of authority. And then we're going to come back on the final part of the program and talk about how Islam has, in fact, infiltrated the church in America, why they've done it, and what their goal is.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap today, discussing the pressing issues facing our culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. Now let's rejoin our host.
Well, welcome back to Stand in the Gap today. I'm Sam Rohr, and today co-hosting Dave Kistler and our special guest, David New, who we've just been listening to, and now we're going to be introducing our next special guest, Dr. Mark Christian. Our emphasis this week, if you are just joining us, is on what every Christian must know about Islam. This is part four today. We will conclude with this week-long emphasis tomorrow, taking various pieces and aspects of consideration of Islam. We're offering a booklet. It's called What Every Christian Must Know About Islam, How the Global Islamic Agenda Threatens America and Christians. Very, very important. We're doing this because we believe that this emphasis is so very, very critical if we in America are going to want to maintain and hold on to the freedom that we believe God has given to us. But it's under assault, and we have to understand what that is. This booklet, only 26 pages long, very small, a very, very good tool, a reference item. You can get it for a gift of any amount. Just go to standinthegapradio.com, standinthegapradio.com, and you will find it there, and you can access and order that book, order many of them if you want, for friends and others. You really want to do it, What Every Christian Must Know About Islam. Now, we've looked at some history past, Islam, how it engaged our nation in the 1700s, We've been down this road before. We're going to move now up to the 21st century. And while the totalitarian tenets of Islam, referred to by our founders as Mohammedan, the religion is the way they described it, our leaders understood, and our pulpits made very clear. They warned. They knew about it. But something has dramatically changed in this last generation, and I would say sped up almost as on steroids in the last 20 years or so. We now sit here in America where apologists for Muhammad and Islam sit not only in positions of power and influence in the media, but they sit in government and, yes, in the church in America. Now, in this next segment, we're going to discuss with Dr. Mark Christian, founder of Global Faith Initiative, a former Muslim imam, how Mohammedan Islam has targeted the U.S. government for infiltration. And then again, as I mentioned earlier in the last segment, we're going to talk very clearly about how it has infiltrated the church in America. You don't want to miss any of this. And with that, I want to welcome to the program today Mark Christian. Mark, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Mark, you've been on our program today. Our listeners really enjoy you, and because your knowledge is so deep. We've talked a little bit on this program before about how Islam previously challenged the United States, as we did. We just did that in the last segment. You and I have talked about it before on this program, how infiltration has been happening and all that kind of thing. But lots of people here tend to think, well, that's just over there. That's over in the Middle East. But the reality of it is, Islam has come now on shore, and it's within us. I'm just going to give you a basic question here, Mark. To what extent has militant Islam infiltrated the United States government and the media?
To an extent that nobody can even imagine or fathom, and this has been going on since mid-70s, 1970, and it has been going on very strong from a Muslim perspective for years, without understanding, without knowing, and without even actually fathoming why they are doing what they are doing and so forth.
Mark, let me ask you this. It takes just a casual perusal of the media to see that there is the token Muslim that's on there spouting the typical lie that Islam is a peaceful religion and that the word Islam itself means peace. When it does not, it means submission. And then if you know anything, as I do because I minister on Capitol Hill, if you know anything about even the United States State Department, especially under the Obama administration, it was riddled through with scores of Muslims who were exerting their ideas and Islamic ideology onto the U.S. State Department. And it didn't end there. It was in the White House. It was all throughout the government. And tragically, all too much of it is still present. What is the goal of this very successful infiltration that has taken place in the United States government?
See, the sad part, this is a great question, and it's a great show actually so far. There's so much I would love to share because I lived in the East and I lived in the West. I lived as a Muslim and I am born again Christian. I understand the mentality of Islam and now I can say that I am new in Christ. And one of the biggest problems in America that they do not pay attention to anything until it has a direct effect on them personally. And it is disturbing their life in ways that kind of getting their attention. Otherwise, they don't see it. And the problem when you are talking about the infiltration that took place during Obama administration and how during Obama administration we have lots of Muslims, you know, or Islamists into the administration in different places throughout the government of the United States of America, it is true, but this is when people paid attention. But it has been going on since the 70s and even way before that. Obama did not bring Islam to America. Islam was already in America, and Obama just highlighted that more than any other administration before, and it started affecting people in their daily life like never before. But did Islam and the Islamist movement look at America and try to infiltrate it for many years? Absolutely. If you look at the history, and then you look at the second wave, and the most strong wave started in the 70s. And one thing I would love people to know, Islam operates from a victim mentality. Islam has been a victim and acting as a victim since the time of Muhammad. When Muhammad started waging the war against everybody else, he was claiming that he is a victim. He started stealing from people in the day one from he started when he started the Islamic State, and claiming that because he has been robbed and kicked out, this is because he's a victim, now he's going to take revenge. When he was a victim, he is going to start waging war. Until today, Muslims will always act as a victim. They are innocent. They have done nothing. They are only protecting themselves. They are protecting themselves from the Islamophobe. They are protecting themselves from the American military forces that is killing their kids and so forth. And they are protecting themselves from all the crazy Christians that are trying to destroy them and defeat them and so forth. And they need nothing other than to worship and to live in peace, which is far from true, because the essence of Islam is spreading the word of Islam and establishing a kingdom of Islam on earth. And the day of judgment will never come until the flag of the Islam is rising on every corner of the planet. Those are the words of Muhammad, and he is doing this again from a victim perspective, that, you know, Allah will stand with you when everybody else is against you, and you will fight the good fight, and Allah will make you victorious.
And Mark, I think that's a great point that you are making there. And ladies and gentlemen, I'm hoping that you are listening very carefully to what Dr. Mark Christian is sharing there. Just look around in the media. How often are we seeing the victim mentality? And Mark, I'm going to come back to you. We're going to talk about how the church has been infiltrated in just a moment. But I would dare say that the normal Christian mentality of feeling sorry for the underdog, being the one to help the poor and the downtrodden, has actually played into this strategy that's employed by this victim mentality of Islam. Would you agree to that?
Absolutely. The way to get into the church, and they have been doing it for years, is to highlight the mistakes of the church over the years and feel that the church wants to apologize for what was going on. And then on the same time, parallel to that kind of action, talking about Muslims as victims and they need nothing other than, you know, help. So the Christians run for help for the victims, and they are pretending the best way to do as victims. So they are playing on the history of any defects in the Christian history of churches, and at the same time highlighting how much of a victim they are. So the churches is left other than apologizing and helping Muslims.
That's a great point. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to come back on that again in the next segment. You don't want to tune out. We're going to talk about how Islam has infiltrated the church. But, Mark, I want to go back to you right now. Who are some of the players in this last minute here? Who are some of the organizations or the faces that have actually been the mechanism for Islamic penetration into media and the government?
See, Islam always have a leader. When the leader was defeated in 1920, the Muslim Brotherhood took the banner, and today the Muslim Brotherhood is the unofficial government and the unofficial caliphate of Islam. And they are operating in every country under different names, but they're still under the big umbrella of the Muslim Brotherhood. Today in America, we have Council of American Islamic Relationship, we have Islamic Society of North America, we have Muslim Student Association, and the list goes on. Front groups of the Muslim Brotherhood. It has been confirmed by the FBI. It has confirmed by the federal court. It is confirmed by the history of the founders of those organizations in America. The Muslim Brotherhood is the unofficial government of Islam, and they are the shakers of every Islamic movement that is going on across the globe.
Dr. Mark Christian, ladies and gentlemen, telling us some very, very important information. The Muslim Brotherhood, de facto government Islam worldwide. It is the face, it is the front group for other organizations, many of them in this nation that are advancing and infiltrating militant Islam into our government and media. Well, now, when we come back, we're going to talk about how this same strategy has infiltrated the church in America. Yes, you heard me right. Is the church in America, has it been infiltrated by the Islamic world? Answer is yes. We're going to talk about it in just a moment.
There's a silent but deadly cult spreading like a cancer among us. It's already martyred millions around the world and forced others into sexual slavery. That deadly cult is Islam. Pretending to be something it is not, Islam masquerades as peace but means submission. Yet most Americans are oblivious to this danger within. You can now learn the truth. You can get an attractive copy of What Every Christian Must Know About Islam this week for a gift of any amount from Stand in the Gap Radio. With key facts from previous radio programs and guests on Stand in the Gap today, including former Muslims, now Christians, former FBI agents, and preachers. This quick read booklet tells you what you need to know, simply and clearly. What Every Christian Must Know About Islam, an original publication of the American Pastors Network and Stand in the Gap Radio. Yours now for a gift of any amount. Just go to standinthegapradio.com to order or write us at Stand in the Gap Radio, Box 83, West Main Street, Elverson, Pennsylvania, 19520. Christian parents want their children to excel in spiritual growth and educational achievement. Both are essential for future success in an increasingly complex world full of moral and economic challenges. BJU Press Materials place great value on the knowledge of God in His works. They teach critical thinking skills your child will need to get along both now and in the future. BJU Press Materials are available for grades K-12. From the earliest grades, they teach biblical Christianity as a system of God-revealed truths. BJU Press Materials are well written, grade level appropriate, and biblically integrated. Teachers' editions assure that instructors have the plans and extra tools to keep your child engaged and excited about learning by teaching your child how to analyze, evaluate, and ultimately create new solutions. And that's just what today's workplace is looking for. If you're a Christian school teacher or administrator, a homeschool teacher, or a parent who just wants your child to learn more, start by exploring the BJU Press website. Visit bjupress.com. That's bjupress.com.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. And now, let's rejoin Stand in the Gap Today.
For an avowed enemy of freedom, an enemy of Jesus Christ, an enemy of the U.S. Constitution, to successfully infiltrate media and the government, one could say, is the result of a very brilliant military strategy. On the other hand, for the same enemy to infiltrate the Church of Jesus Christ, the foundation from which truth and wisdom and discernment is proclaimed, is something totally different, in my opinion, far more dangerous. Yet the enemy of truth has done just that, and I believe now threatens to totally neutralize the only power capable of confronting the military strategy for total domination. That mechanism is the church. Now, to share the ugly facts with us, I want to invite back in Dr. Mark Christian, who was just with us, talking with us about how Islam has infiltrated the government. We're going to talk about the church in just a moment, but Dave Kistler, you and I were just talking just a little bit ago. You've got a question that's pressing you want to put before Mark before we shift to the church. Go ahead and do that, please, if you can.
Thank you, Sam. And Mark, I want to just maybe get a one or two word answer to this if I could. We talked in the last segment about Islam's infiltration into our government and how it is incompatible with really the U.S. Constitution for Islamists to try to live by their law, Sharia law. I want to ask you about this. Not only has the infiltration occurred in government, it's occurred in law enforcement. And very recently with the shootings in Parkland, Florida, this has been elevated to a topic of discussion because of the deputy police chief in Parkland, Nazar Hamzi, who is not only a Muslim, he is a member of CARE there in Florida. My question to you simply is this: is it really possible for a law enforcement individual that is committed to Islam, is it possible for them to actually enforce U.S. law if their commitment is to Islamic law?
The key to the answer to the question that you just put is the last statement. If they are 100% committed to their faith and they are 100% committed to Islamic law, then there is no chance whatsoever that they will try to apply any other law other than that. If there is Muslims out there who are not serious about their faith, then we have a different issue. But the reality is, if they are committed to Sharia law, then they cannot abide with the Constitution. The very first amendment of the Constitution is a complete opposite of everything the Quran and Islam teaches.
You answered that question straight up. Ladies and gentlemen, I hope you understood that. A committed Muslim means they're committed to Sharia. Sharia is absolutely incompatible with, totally opposite to, the United States Constitution. Therefore, they cannot, a committed Muslim, cannot enforce U.S. law, nor can they actually participate in supporting or promoting self-government under God, as by our Constitution. Now, Mark, just because of time, I'm going to have to shift because I want to go to the church here right now. How deeply has Islam, militant Islam, infiltrated the Church of America? How are they doing it, and what is the goal? I want to go here just quickly. Start this. How deeply has Islam infiltrated the church, the evangelical church, the church at large in America?
Very, 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 very large. And you and I had this presentation called Beheading the Church that explains in details, and I encourage people to go and Google that on YouTube. You will see it very clearly how much the church has been infiltrated. Right now, the Muslim Brotherhood is trying their best to take over the Catholic Church as well, because it is the biggest church in America or in the world at this point in time. So they are infiltrating every aspect of the church in America, whether, you know, many evangelical Christians, many Protestant denomination, and they are working very hard to infiltrate the Catholic Church more than you can even imagine. And if you don't mind, I want to highlight a point that I explained earlier, and I want to explain to pastors and Christians out there what Islam and Muslims do. Islam exploits your mistakes, overwhelm you with your mistakes to make you sink in your own guilt. At the same time, parallel to that, they play as the most victims that you have ever seen. So you are left with nothing other than feeling guilty and running to the help of Muslims. And at the same time, fighting anyone who ever brings the truth to the front, like we are doing right now.
Mark, let me ask you this. The attempt to infiltrate the church, what is the goal? I mean, what is the end game thereafter? And then let me ask you this quickly, because our time's running out. Can anything be done to stop the infiltration, not only into our country, but into the church?
Absolutely. There is many things that can be done. The truth will set you free. So if the church start getting more serious about their faith and to put Jesus in center into every church in America, then we will be able to eliminate any false teachings and any false prophets and any kind of lies that is going on in the church. So number one, I'm asking the church to do nothing other than to focus and to put their all effort into the message of Jesus Christ, and everything will be straightened out. The other thing is, how can we stop this, and what is the end goal for Islam? The end goal is very simple for them. Islam from first one is all about building a massive empire that is built by Islam, and it is governed by Sharia law. The first goal that they want the United States of America to help them regain the land that they owned before. And after that, as soon as they gain that, they're going to start marching into fulfilling the prophecy of Muhammad and the prophecy of Islam to take over the rest of the planet.
Mark, Christian, I want you to go back just a little bit and just mention again, you earlier with us at American Pastors Network, you did a presentation called Beheading the Church. Give just about 30 seconds of what that contained and where people can find that as well before we close out the program. Can you do that, please?
Absolutely. You know, you can go on YouTube right now or on your website, and you will find our website as well, globalfaithinstitute.org, and you will find the Beheading of the Church presentation. It's a one-hour presentation that goes into details of this. And basically, the Muslim Brotherhood front groups have been deceiving and luring different church denominations into signing on the common word document and to be part of a shoulder-to-shoulder movement and gaining one church after another throughout the United States of America to be under the umbrella of the Muslim Brotherhood to further the goal of Islam. There is many churches have signed already onto that, including the United Church of Christ, the Lutheran, you know, a couple of Lutheran denominations as well, and many, many other churches. You will find the list, all of them. I think the up to 32 denominations already signed in for that, and many of the Jewish, you know, organizations and synagogues as well. And now they are focusing more than you can even imagine on getting the Catholic Church at large and in the United States specifically to be part of that movement as well. This is a very dangerous movement. It's a movement that will destroy Christianity from within and make Islam superior, exactly as the Memorandum of Understanding of the Muslim Brotherhood have declared and spelled out exactly.
Dr. Mark Christian, ladies and gentlemen, we're at the end of the program. Stand in the Gap today. You've been listening to Dr. Mark Christian. This is Sam Rohr along with Dave Kistler, our special guest at the beginning of the program, David New, on the emphasis, What Every Christian Must Know About Islam, a booklet. You need to get it for a gift of any amount. Go to our website, standinthegapradio.com. For a gift of any amount, you can have this fine small booklet with quotes from Dr. Mark Christian and a host of other guests we've had on this program. You need to have it. We must know what's going on, ladies and gentlemen. If you know Jesus Christ, stand firmly on that basis, that foundation, that truth. Let the truth be known. That is what makes us free. Until tomorrow, stand in the gap for truth wherever you are.
We hope you've enjoyed listening to Stand in the Gap today. Stand in the Gap today is another quality ministry of the American Pastors Network, addressing the most pressing issues affecting the culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. We take seriously the command to be salt and light and the mission to declare truth in the public square. Stand in the Gap Radio is supported through the prayers and tax-deductible financial gifts from listeners like you. Would you please consider a donation to help us increase our outreach of biblical truth? To learn more about us and make your donation, please visit standinthegapradio.com. You may also give from our smartphone app. Download the Stand in the Gap app. Search for it in your web store under the heading Stand in the Gap. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in every weekday at the same time for Stand in the Gap today.
If my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then I will hear from heaven and I will forgive their sin and heal their land. 2 Chronicles 7:14. WFYL reminds you to pray for America.